Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Read from Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 10, chapter 21, text 19. Ga gopakara nuvanam nayato udara. Vanam nayato udara. Venus vanai kalapadaistamo britsu sakyaha. Aspandanam gati matam pulukastarunam. Niryoga parsakita lakshanayo vichitram. Gagopakairanuvanam nayatorudara. Gaha, the cows. Gopakai, with the cowherd boys. Hanuvanam, to each forest. Nayato, leading. Udara, very liberal. Venus vanai, by the vibrations of the Lord's flute. Kalapadai, having sweet tones. Tanubritsu, among the living entities. Sakyaha, O friends. Aspandanam, the lack of movement. Gati matam, of those living entities that can move. Pulakaha, the ecstatic jubilation. Tarunam, of the otherwise non-moving trees. Nidyoga pasa, the ropes for binding the rear legs of the cows. Kritalakshanayo, of those two, Krishna and Balaram, who are characterized by vichitram, wonderful. My dear friends, as Krishna and Balaram pass through the forest with their cowherd friends, leading their cows, they carry ropes to bind the cow's rear legs at the time of milking. When Lord Krishna plays on his flute, the sweet music causes the moving living entities to become stunned and the non-moving trees to tremble with ecstasy. These things are certainly very wonderful. Purport. Krishna and Balaram would sometimes wear their cowherding ropes on their heads and sometimes carry them on their shoulders, and thus they were beautifully decorated with all the equipment of cowherd boys. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the ropes of Krishna and Balaram are made of yellow cloth and have clusters of pearls at both ends. Sometimes they wear these ropes around their turbans, and the ropes thus become wonderful decorations. I might read the last verse and purport as well, since that's more storyline than anything. Evam vidha bhagavato ya vrindavana charinaha vanayantyo mito gopya kridastan mayatam yayuhu. Thus narrating to one another the playful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he wandered about in the Vrindavan forest, the gopis became fully absorbed in thoughts of him. Purport. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments, This is the perfect example of Krishna consciousness. To somehow or other remain always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. The vivid example is always present in the behaviour of the gopis. Therefore Lord Chaitanya declared that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method that is better than the method of the gopis. The gopis were not born in very high Brahmana or Kshatriya families. They were born in the families of Vaishyas, and not in big mercantile communities, but in the families of cowherd men. They were not very well educated, although they heard all sorts of knowledge from the Brahmanas, the authorities of Vedic knowledge. The gopis' only purpose was to remain always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada in the 10th canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Gopis Glorify the Song of Krishna's Flute. Could somebody grab me a mat, please? Just the top one's okay. I need to bolster my... So this is actually the end of a very, very nice chapter of which Sivaram Maharaj has written a whole book called the Vaino Gita, in which he combines Prabhupada's commentaries and the commentaries of the Acharyas into a very smoothly flowing description of these prayers by the gopis. This is a prequel to the next chapter in which Krishna directly is seen in the association of the gopis. And what we're seeing is, as we've discussed before, is a progression of the different relationships or the different rasas, the different exchanges that Krishna has with his devotees. In the early pastimes of Krishna, the relationship is basically between Krishna and his parents. In the pastimes that we've just been reading, the relationship, especially in this description actually in the previous verse, is mentioned. Gopikaya, with the cowherd boys. The descriptions of Krishna's pastimes are primarily his relationships with the gopas, with his suckers, with his friends. But it's very interesting to note that this chapter is a view of Krishna's pastimes with the cowherd boys, but seen through the eyes of the gopis, who have a very, very strong attraction and affection for Krishna. In fact, these last three verses are spoken by Radharani herself. How wonderful it is to be with Krishna. How attractive Krishna and his friends are in the forest. And in one sense, it's lamentation. As well, it's quite a poignant chapter in the Krishna book, because it's a lamentation on the part of the gopis and also on the part of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, because they're feeling great separation from Krishna and Balaram. It's breaking their hearts that Krishna is not with them. This is the level of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. That if they can't see Krishna, if they can't be with Krishna, then the pain of separation is almost so great that they can't even do anything, practically speaking. They become so stricken with grief in the pain of separation that they become almost useless.
Almost.
Yugayatam nimishena chakshusha pravasayatam. A moment feels like a yuga. Right? And sometimes the word yuga is translated as meaning 12 years. Right? So a moment feels like 12 years or more, right? Because a yuga is also, we know, a very, very long, you know, span of time. Yugayatim namashena. So without seeing you, then I feel like a moment is like 12 years or more. This is the mood of separation. We can hardly imagine that kind of attachment and affection for Krishna. Natural attachment and affection for Krishna. Has anybody here experienced that feeling of separation from something? Usually doesn't happen. You know, maybe you get some puppy love between a girl and a boy. And then, you know, when the boy can't be with the girl, then, or the girl can't be with the boy, then they, you know, they're swooning and moping and, you know, can't do anything. But even that's just a fraction of the depth of love that's experienced. So here, even though it is the cowherd boys, it's a description of the pastimes of Krishna with his suckers. Actually, it's from the point of view of the gopis. Now, even though they're separated apparently from Krishna, still, in their grief or in their lamentation, what do? Then they think of Krishna. Right? Matschita, we were discussing this the other day. Matschita, matkata, prana, bodhayanta, parasparam, katayantascha, mamnityam, tusyanticha, romanticha. That even though they're separated from Krishna, they can't help but think of Krishna. So even though they're separated, their thoughts are always with Krishna. So they're thinking, you know, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are thinking, oh, how are Krishna and Balaram now? It must be time for them to return home. Let's send a messenger out to see what they're up to. Right? Let's find out what's going on. In the meantime, Mother Yashoda's already sent, you know, morning tea, lunchtime, afternoon tea, and other, you know, offerings of prasadam and so forth, and messengers out to see what Krishna and Balaram are doing. They're always thinking, oh, what are they doing now? Where are they? It must be time for them to come back. So in this way, even though they're not directly with Krishna, and the only way they can be, you know, the pain of separation can be relieved is by Krishna's personal presence, still they're thinking, and actually, in thinking of Krishna, then their pangs of separation are relieved. Because it is very interesting, actually, that Krishna is a very interesting subject, if you like. The subject of Krishna is very interesting. It's unlimited, actually. The subject of Krishna, who Krishna is. Because ultimately, Krishna is everything. Everything exists within Krishna. There's nothing that's separated from Krishna. It's only our consciousness that actually separates us from Krishna. We're always with Krishna. Krishna's always with us. We're always in Krishna. Whilst we may always be in Krishna, when we're not thinking of Krishna, we might as well not be. So it's a question of consciousness. This is why the gopis, the other residents of Vrindavan, because as we were discussing previously, the shakas are having so much fun with Krishna and Balaram in the daytime. Ah, yes, we've got. But at night time, then it's another story, because then they're feeling great separation from Krishna. Right? So it's their turn to then feel the pangs of pain, painful separation. So that, you know, they go to bed thinking, oh no, we have to wait all night before we can go out and play with Krishna again. Right? We have to wait all night. I don't know if you've ever been excited about the next day's activities. And the thought of having to go to bed and sleep is too much because it's going to be such a long time before the next day comes. You ever had that experience?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hasn't happened to me very often. I remember once it happened to me because I think I was 5 or 6, might have been my sixth birthday, and the next day I was going to get a soccer ball. And man, I was so revved up by the fact that tomorrow is my birthday and I'm going to get a soccer ball. Wow. And I couldn't go to sleep. I wouldn't go to sleep. So, you know, 10 o'clock, I'm still awake. 11 o'clock, I'm still awake. Midnight, I'm still awake. And pestering my parents. What time is it? Is it the morning yet? So, you know, I annoyed my father so much that he brought the soccer ball in. He says, look, you can have the soccer ball now, but I've got to get you to go to sleep. So, I went to sleep with my soccer ball in my bed. So, you know, it's hard to imagine these things because, especially as we get older and a bit jaded, you know, we don't get excited about anything. Actually, we're more excited about going to sleep so we can forget life. Forget how tough everything is. Let's just go to sleep. But the cowherd boys are waking up, you know, at 9 o'clock. They've just gone to bed. 9 o'clock, they get up, get dressed and go over to Krishna and Balaram's house. Okay, Krishna, come on, let's go. Time to play. Mother Yashoda shoos them away. Look, go away. Krishna's taking rest. Then they come again an hour later. Krishna, come on. The sun's nearly rising. It's time to get going. So all of these pastimes illustrate the deep affection and a full absorption that the devotees of Vrindavan, this is the characteristic of the residents of Vrindavan, is their love and affection for Krishna. Even though, as Prabhupada points out here, as is quoted, they were not learned as such. Interesting. It's described how Krishna is the Param Brahman, the supreme goal, if you like, the supreme destination, Param Dham. And yogis, you know, drill the breath and perform austerities for many, many lifetimes in order to achieve the ultimate goal. And the jnanis study the Vedas. But here we find that the gopis weren't performing great austerities, neither were they highly learned as such. But they had the basic ingredients of devotion, which means that they were very devoted. They loved Krishna. They had great affection for Krishna. So that whatever Krishna wanted, they were prepared to do it. You know, there's the story of Krishna getting a headache and Narada Muni asking him, you know, how he could help out to get rid of his headache. And Krishna said, I just need to get the dust, maybe give me the dust of your feet and that'll... Narada Muni said, I don't think I can do that. That's not clear. If I do that, then I'll go to hell. So he said, all right, look, can you find one of my devotees who... So he went and visited all the different devotees and none of them would give the dust of the... But then he went to Krishna and he said, look, I couldn't find anybody. So Krishna said, look, go and see the gopis of Vrindavan and they will help me. So he went to see the gopis and the gopis said, fine, we'll give the dust of our lotus feet. And Narada Muni says, but you'll go to hell in the process. so offensive to put the dust of your feet on Krishna's head. And they said, we don't mind. We don't mind. If going to hell makes Krishna happy, then we're happy. But this is the degree of surrender of the gopis. The degree of affection. Right? There's love, real love and affection. So although they were not very, actually it's interesting, they were not very educated, but they listened, they would hear from the brahmanas, and you know, because the Vedic culture is traditionally respectful of the brahmanas. There's an interesting story in the Vaina Gita of Madhu Mangala, because Madhu Mangala was a brahmana, right? And as a brahmana he likes sweets. And he'd been given some sweets by Jatila, which were highly prized delicacies. And he hid them in his scarf, just like it's described here, how the cowherd boys would wear a scarf. And then Krishna and Balaram sometimes would tie the rope that they would use for tying up the legs of the cows. And he tucked it into the back of his dhoti. Because he didn't want to share it with anybody else, basically. He didn't want to share his prasadam with anybody else. So he was spied by Balaram. And Balaram thought, what are you up to? What are you up to, Madhu Mangala? And Madhu Mangala said, Balaram, I'm not up to anything. What are you up to? You know, I'm a highly qualified brahmana who's in control of his senses and is very learned. And you Vaishyas should be a lot more respectful to the brahmanas than you ordinarily are. Shouldn't be so disrespectful to me. And you should basically mind your own business. Balaram said, I suspect that you're up to something. What have you got hidden in your dhoti? He said, nothing, it's just some prasadam that was offered to the sun god. Nothing that you'd be interested in. And Balaram said, well, you're a brahmana. It's your religious duty to receive and then give in charity. You should fulfill your religious duty and give in charity to everybody. And Madhu Mangala's response was, as a brahmana, I am fully satisfied. And when I'm inspired, when I'm, you know, so inspired, then I will give in charity. But otherwise not. So Balaram said, look, we're surrounded by a lot of lusty cowherd boys. If you're not, and I sense that they're already planning to attack you and steal your stash. Right? I suspect they've already got designs on your prasadam. So at that point, then Balaram gave a secret nod to the cowherd boys. And they all attacked Madhu Mangala, right? Some from the front, some from behind. From the front, they came and pulled his dhoti out. From the front, from behind, they pulled his dhoti out at the back, right? This is what the Gurukul boys do to each other. It's what we used to do at school. It's called scragging. I don't know, did you ever scrag your friends? Pull their shirt out, you know. Actually, one of the things that we used to do at school was grab a boy, right, from behind, and then tip him up and pull his legs up to his chest, right? And then what you do is you stuff them in a rubbish bin. Right. And they're in the rubbish bin like this. Right. You can't get out. I don't know if you've ever been stuck in a rubbish bin like that, but you can't get out. Then what you do is you tip the rubbish bin over so it falls over. I don't recommend that you do this, actually. But anyway, it's the kind of thing. It's the kind of cheeky fun that boys have with each other. right, when they're playing with each other. Some boys came from the front, some boys came from behind. They pulled his dhoti out, right? Then his belly came out because he's quite chubby. Others stole his flute and his stick and his rope. Actually, I don't think he had a rope. He's a brahmana. So they stole the turban that was on his head. And, of course, they stole the prasadam that he had stashed. And then laughing and carrying on, they started to eat the prasadam. And, of course, Madhumangala became very upset and started cursing them. You disrespectful, uncultured, poorly educated cowherd men, cowherd boys. So anyway, these types of dealings show the intimacy of affection that Krishna shares with the residents of Vrindavan. And of course, this is the meditation. This is the meditation of the gopis. They're meditating on these pastimes of Krishna. Although they can't be present with Krishna, they're praying, let me also have that same kind of intimate relationship with Krishna that he has with his friends. But of course, because the Vedic culture is designed in such a way so that the boys and girls are not mixing, so then the girls are not in a situation where they can associate with Krishna freely like that. Right? But still, that's the desire of the gopis. Actually, the gopis' desire is to have an even more intimate and affectionate relationship with Krishna. Naturally, because Krishna is the most handsome, he's the most beautiful, he's the most charming person, he's the most witty, and the most cheeky, and the most sneaky, right? So they are, because they're such great devotees, then they want to have the most intimate relationship with Krishna. That is, they want to be Krishna's girlfriends or Krishna's wives. They actually want Krishna as their husband. That's their mood of affection. And you know, we read about how these personalities come from different sources. You know, the gopis are the personified Vedas. Some of the gopis are the personified Vedas who come to participate. Some of them are the rishis who saw Lord Ramchandra embracing Sita, and they saw the ecstasy that Sita was experiencing. They were thinking, oh, if only we could experience that same ecstasy. But they were attracted to Lord Ramchandra in that conjugal mood. So they also took birth as the gopis. So it was only natural for them to have this great affection and love for Krishna. So we're seeing Krishna's pastimes, the relationships with his sakas, with his boyfriends, in this section of the Bhagavatam. But in the next section of the Bhagavatam, we see, especially in the next chapter, we see how Krishna is aware of the desires of the gopis. Right? And so then he makes arrangements so that he can fulfill their desire. He can fulfill that desire of the gopis. And so we see that he, you know, at the end of the Kartik season, at the end of that autumn season, then there's the Katyani Brata is observed. And the gopis observe that Brata. Very early in the morning they would go and take a bath in the Jamuna and make their offerings to Katyayani. That's Durga, I think. Goddess Durga. And pray to her every day for a month. And you know, at that time of at that time it's the beginning of December in Vrindavan, which is the winter months are coming. So it's quite cold. So it's an austerity for them. That's why it's a bit of a joke, you know, that Krishna steals their clothes at that time while they're taking a bath. But of course, he did that to fulfill their desires, which are manifesting here, demonstrated here. And the gopis are the emblem, if you like, of this mood of always being surrendered to Krishna, always thinking of Krishna, always thinking of what's best for Krishna. Prabhupada's quoted here. The vivid example is always present in the behaviour of the gopis. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya declared that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method that is better than the method of the gopis. Always thinking of Krishna. Although it's interesting, actually, not that we're so intimate with Krishna, but you can see with the pastimes of the shakas, the intimacy is not always that they're fully obedient to Krishna, right? Like Madhumangala, for example. Madhumangala, you know, he was actually keeping the prasadam to himself, but that creates a nice then fight between the gopas, and of course that's then very pleasing to Krishna. So the different discussions, even when the devotees become proud, like Madhumangala, he becomes proud and he says, you know, you vaishyas, you know, uncultured vaishyas, being disrespectful to the brahmanas and so forth. That's actually very pleasing to Krishna. So the intimacy. But the core, if you like, the core of that intimacy is that the devotees are always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And as Prabhupada says, quoting Lord Chaitanya, that worship of the Lord with great affection, always thinking of Krishna is the best. So something to be meditated upon, these pastimes of Krishna, and especially the pastimes of the gopis, and the gopis' deep absorption in service to Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada encourages the devotees in general to think of Krishna, even though, as I mentioned, we are actually never separated from Krishna, but because we're not conscious of Krishna, then we feel as if there's some difference, there's some separation. And the means by which we reconnect is by the same process, actually. This is why the gopis are the example. By rendering service to Krishna means we'll always be thinking of Krishna. By thinking of Krishna and working for Krishna, then we're engaged in devotional service. Krishna is known as Hrishikesh. Hrishika means the senses, and Isha means the controller. So Krishna is the controller of the senses. So if we allow Krishna to control our senses by being engaged in his service, then automatically we'll be remembering Krishna, will be Krishna conscious, basically. This is why we pray for service. And of course, as I mentioned before, service, dasyam, is the beginning of the more intimate stages of devotional service. Meditation, if you like, or absorption in Krishna begins with dasya. And one can be elevated to the higher moods, or what shall we say, understanding of the sakas and the parents. What do we call the parents? Vatsalya. And the madhurya ras of the gopis. We enter into the mood of those relationships by first of all entering through the dasya. And of course dasya means the service of the spiritual master. Krishna is a expanded subject. In that, as I mentioned before, he's within everything. Krishna is within everything. And as such, he's an expanded subject in that he's, especially in this day and age, he's manifest in six features. Right? We observe five features in the Panchatattva, but actually there are six features described by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? There's the Panchatattva, but then there's one additional feature which is added. Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan. So the spiritual master is the added feature, if you like, the sixth feature. There's the Panchatattva is Lord Chaitanya himself. Lord Chaitanya himself, but a special feature of Krishna, right? Lord Chaitanya is a special feature of Krishna. Because it's Krishna, but Krishna appearing for a particular purpose. Two external reasons why Lord Chaitanya appears is because, well, first is that Advaita Acharya called for him. Right? Advaita Acharya could see Kali Yuga is a pretty difficult situation. So we need actually Krishna himself to appear in order to rectify the situation. And so the second cause of Lord Chaitanya's appearance was that he wanted to distribute this Madhurya Prem, this love for Krishna that's experienced by the residents of Vrindavan, he wanted to distribute that liberally as it had never been distributed before. This is the Audarya mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Liberal, just giving this Krishna Prem to everybody. This is why Rupa Goswami describes Lord Chaitanya. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Because he's giving love of Krishna, the same emotional, ecstatic feelings of devotional service that are experienced by the residents of Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya is giving that freely to everybody, actually, through the chanting of Hare Krishna and through the engagement in devotional service. Interesting. But he also came for another purpose, and that is to he wanted to know what is Radharani seeing in me that makes her so attractive to me, and what is she experiencing? What is she seeing, and what is she experiencing? So it's Krishna appearing as his own servant, accompanied by Lord Nityananda. Of course, Lord Nityananda is also called the spiritual. He's also called the spiritual master, if you like. But of course, he's the supreme personality of Godhead himself. He's the original spiritual master. Then Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu. So he's the supreme personality of Godhead himself, from whom all of the universes expand, right? But even he's attracted to wanting to come and participate in these pastimes of distributing love of Godhead to everybody freely and to experience it himself. But it's so attractive. And then there's Srivas and Gadadhar. Gadadhar is the expansion of the internal potency. Srimati Radharani. Srivas is the expansion of the pure devotee, Narada Muni. So Krishnadas Kaviraj mentions all of these personalities, but he also adds then the guru, Vande Gurun. Actually, not just the guru, but the gurus. Right? There isn't just one guru, but there are many gurus. One guru in the sense that we take diksha or initiation, formal recognition of our relationship and connection with Krishna from one person. But also we have many instructing gurus, or we may have many instructing gurus. And by learning how to see the devotees, see Krishna's personally present in the instructions of the devotees, in the association of the devotees actually, we can learn how to perform devotional service so that we can enter into these Vrindavan pastimes. But it all begins initially with this mood of service to the spiritual master, to the initiating spiritual master. In our case, we have many gurus. It can be a little confusing sometimes. And it's an art to work out how to work cooperatively in a society of devotees, keeping all of these relationships into consideration. Right? Because not only do we have the initiating guru, the instructing guru, we have the founder, acharya, right? The guru of our institution, if you like. We have to take that personality into consideration. But by learning the art of association, we can enter into the realm of dasya, actually. Just entering into the realm of dasya is not easy. Becoming a servant. It's not just, you know, shaving our heads and putting on tilak, or putting on a sari and putting on tilak makes us a devotee. But rather it's entering into the mood of a servant of the devotees in the right, with the right service attitude, working cooperatively and supportively. This is how we can gain acceptance into the spiritual realm, by actually becoming a servant of the spiritual master, or the spiritual masters, because there's not just one, there's many, and knowing how to work cooperatively with each one of them. Especially also within ISKCON, we have an institution. We have an institutional guru system as well, in that each community generally has a temple leader, and that personality is also given some respect. The temple departmental managers are also given a siksha role. Right? And these are important. These have to be honoured and worked within and recognised. Not that we go overboard, you know, it doesn't mean we have to worship the temple president like he's God, say for example. It would be ridiculous. But, you know, in order to have a functional institution, we need to know how to work together. And we need to respect the authority structure. It's a siksha system that was established by Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted us to follow that kind of a system. And of course, those who take on that responsibility have to become not, yes, I'm the person who tells everybody what to do, but rather I'm the servant. I'm also a servant. It's all done. Even the spiritual master, when he takes on the responsibility of being the, if you like, the master, the spiritual master, actually he takes it on in the role of service to the disciple, interestingly enough. So all of the roles that we take on are in a mood of servitorship. So it's interesting, you know, we have, in order to enter into dasya though, is not easy. It's not as simple as it looks. It requires a great deal of meditation and contemplation and consideration of our own position, and then accepting that the ISKCON institution, if you like, is designed in such a way so that by becoming submissive to our gurus and becoming a servant of the devotees, considering or in consideration of all those relationships, we are then allowed access into Sri Vrindavan Dham. Actually, first of all, we're allowed access into ISKCON, but that's sort of like a training ground. Then if we're very good devotees and we learn how to work cooperatively with each other, then we may be fortunate to gain access into the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya, if we're lucky, right? If we're very fortunate. Then, if we're lucky, if we're fortunate, and if we're good servants, then we may get access into the, you know, the Krishna Leela. Actually, they're all non-different. And of course, initially we have to go through the externals. We go through the external, you know, externals of surrender. But actually, the whole process is to enter into the realm of devotion, if you like, within the heart. That's where all the work is done, actually. But of course, we still can and will measure our internal development by our external commitment to the basic practices of devotional service, like, you know, washing floors and cleaning pots and distributing prasadam. Or, you know, that's at one level. Or, you know, giving classes, preaching, distributing books, because we're a Brahminical culture. So all of those things. Actually, all of the external things that we do are all designed ultimately to bring ourselves and others into that culture, right? Into that culture of, again, becoming a servant. Because, you know, what is everybody thinking in the material world? Basically, in the material world, people are thinking, I want you to serve me. Right? Yeah, I'm the master. Ishvaraham, aham bhogi. And actually, it's interesting, I notice this in myself, you know. One day I wake up and I'm thinking, yes, I'm a servant of all of the devotees. You know, I'm a great big servant of all of the devotees. But then the next day I wake up and I think, you know, why are you doing this the way I like? Right? So we have to be careful because, you know, sometimes the Ishvara can take a holiday and so out comes the, you know, the Dasya. And then the next day we discover that the Ishvara's come back again and he's kicked the Dasya out. But it is interesting, you know, the simple principles that Prabhupada has given us within ISKCON, actually, they're not so simple. They're extraordinarily powerful principles. But if we are able to enter into that realm of dasya, which means, you know, I take the instructions of the devotees to heart. I take their desires and their wishes as my desires and my wishes. Right? I take Prabhupada's instructions, I take Prabhupada's desires as mine. We have to change, basically, to become a servant. But that's the beginning. That's just the beginning. Once we develop that, learn that. Actually, we have to learn it. It's not. And even, actually, we are dependent very much on Krishna's mercy for even getting that mood. Krishna only reveals himself to somebody who's very sincere. But he himself is giving us the ability to recognize matasmiti agyanam abhavanam cha. Krishna is actually giving us the remembrance and the knowledge. It's his mercy that we're actually able to perceive these things. This is how much we're dependent upon Krishna. And Krishna, if he's very, very kind, will reveal himself in the form of the devotees so that we can actually render service. Interestingly enough. Then we can aspire to be like the gopis, always thinking of Krishna. Right? Always thinking of Krishna. Because we're always thinking of Krishna, what the devotees want. You know, I remember once, the first night that I spent in the temple in Adelaide was Janmashtami night. And half of the temple came to Melbourne to celebrate Janmashtami. So Sikhi Pooja was very enthusiastic for me and Achintaroopa to come and stay in the temple that night because, you know, half the devotees were gone and they needed a bit of assistance, you know. So at midnight on Janmashtami, Sikhi Pooja said to me, oh, have a guess what, Bhakti Andy, we've got a service for you. You can go and do all the pots. Right? So I got to clean all of the pots after the midnight feast on Janmashtami night. Which is sort of what we do with it. You know, we have a big pot washing regime going on here for Janmashtami also. And if you're very fortunate, then you'll get that opportunity to do that service. So anyway, I think I went to bed at about 1:30 in the morning, and you know, it was 4 o'clock and I woke up. I remember I woke up at 4 o'clock and all the other brahmacharis, you know, sleeping, and I said, come on, Prabhu's Mangaladi, let's go, you know, let's get fired up. What? Leave us alone, will you? So this is called Utsaha Mayi, right? enthusiasm. Confidence coming from immature enthusiasm. But anyway, I remember I went to the full morning program and chanted my rounds, and it was a real struggle to stay awake just to chant 16 rounds, but I got 16 rounds done and I felt really super empowered. This is it, 16 rounds. Gaur Premanandi. And but one thing I didn't like was the cold showers. So I went home to have a warm shower and to get some fresh clothes or something. But on the way home, the temple was near the market, and I came about 9 o'clock or 8:30 in the morning. I came past the market, and there were, across the road, there were all these avocados. The truck had gone by, and about 3 boxes of avocados had fallen off the back of the truck. And I thought, wow, far out, look at this. Look at all of these avocados for Krishna. I was thinking for Krishna. Actually, I was thinking for myself, but anyway. And I thought, boy, these would be really good for breakfast. So I gathered up the avocados and brought them back to the temple. And I said, look at this, Prabhus, look at all these avocados I got. Isn't this great? We can offer them to Krishna. Yeah, they said, yeah, well, we'll offer them to Krishna. We'll make them into a salad. And I was thinking, into a salad? That's not how you eat avocados. The way I like to eat avocados is you cut them in half and pull out the pip and then put lemon juice and pepper and that sambal oelek. You know the sambal oelek? The chili paste that you get from Indonesia. Put that on there and then it tastes really good. So this is how I was thinking we should offer them to Krishna, right? So I was going to offer them to Krishna, but the devotee said, no, don't be a speculator, right? We're going to offer them to Krishna in a salad. I thought, that's not very good. Anyway, it was my first lesson one of numerous lessons in having to sometimes on occasion put aside what we want to do and do what the devotees want. So I thought, okay, if this is what Krishna wants and this is what the devotees want, then that's also what I want. Although really, actually, I would have preferred to have the avocados cut in half and still do, actually. So, you know, sometimes Rupa Goswami says we have to be prepared to accept things that ordinarily we wouldn't, and reject things sometimes that we would accept, we want. And in pleasing Krishna's devotees, sometimes it's like that. We're asked to do things which ordinarily we might not do. But this is the beginning of dasya. This is the beginning of being a servant. Accepting service. Especially within a preaching institution, that's very important, because it's the means by which we keep our activities going. Right? It's the means by which we please Prabhupada, actually. Prabhupada gave us certain activities to perform. Book distribution, prasadam distribution, Harinam, cultivating people, bringing people to Krishna consciousness, educating them, helping them make advancement. All of these activities require routines, you know, routine services and so forth that need to be maintained. And so that means then we have to submit to the wishes of the devotees. Otherwise, how would it be? You know, we have a situation where, oh no, Prabhu, I only like to do what, you know, I'm inspired to only do this and I'll do this today. Because then the next day, oh no, I'm not inspired, I won't do it. How do we hope to do anything in that kind of an environment? Not possible. We won't. We won't get anything done. So therefore, we find, actually, and this is it's critical. It's critical to our success individually, but it's also critical to our success collectively, that we learn to work together. And that's just, it's like, you know, it's the means by which we enter into this dasya mood of servitorship. Beginning with submission. Yes, Prabhu, avocado, in the salad with the lettuce and everything else is going to be pleasing to Krishna today. Right? Next year or a couple of years later, when I'm the temple commander and I'm telling everybody what to do, then it'll be avocado with lemon juice and pepper. And that will be pleasing to Krishna also, actually. I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Nishrinkavacha Prabhu. Yes, Vande Guru Nishabhaktam Isha Ishavatarakam. Yeah.
I was wondering, what in your view is the essential principle of Siksha?
Siksha. In Shivaram's book, Taking Siksha Outside of ISKCON, he gives a very nice analysis of what Siksha is. And he makes the comment that the spiritual master is basically concerned with the welfare and the well-being of the disciple, right? And that they're making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So he makes the point that the Siksha gurus, or the people who are working to help others make spiritual advancement, have to be working cooperatively. Their instructions need to be, what's the word? Yes, harmonious. Cohesive. I think harmonious is probably the best. So that there's, you know, because if everybody is resonating in a harmonious way, then it's supportive, right? There's a supportive culture, if you like. And this is one of the reasons why that book is, you know, that's one of the reasons why that book was published, is because over the years, historically, it has been observed and chronicled that when devotees would associate with persons outside of ISKCON, then they would receive less than harmonious instructions with those that were given to us by Prabhupada. And that's one of the reasons why eventually Prabhupada said, you know, my godbrothers have great, you know, they have advancement, experience and so forth, and they can help us, but they can also do great damage. And on the whole, we've seen, you know, damage rather than help. So therefore, better not to associate with them. So therefore, we have a definition, we have a clear guidelines. So within ISKCON, we have a situation where we have to build that supportive, harmonious culture, where we know that certain persons have the role of initiating guru, so we have to take that into consideration. Other devotees have the role or the responsibility of, say, managing a temple department or being a temple president or so forth. They have a responsibility as a siksha and siksha or instructor, right? And then there will be other devotees as well who also helping, as they may not have an official role within ISKCON, but they're helping devotees make advancement. They're giving instructions in classes. They're giving instructions personally to people, helping support them. Their instructions have to be, all of the instructions of those devotees have to be done in a way which is harmonious or supportive of the devotee's spiritual advancement. So, you know, you have a healthy community, say, for example, when the temple president is communicating nicely with the with the Diksha gurus, who are also Siksha gurus of the disciples, and also is aware of the fact that other devotees have relationships with the devotees and is discussing things with them as well. There's an exchange of information about how are we here to help support everybody make spiritual advancement. That's basically what it is. So that's how I see it. And of course that's how Shiva Ram Maharaj explains it. The instruction, and of course those instructions then have to be supported by the Shastra, you know, they don't concoct, and supported by instructions that are coming from the previous acharyas in practical application of how we make advancement in devotional service. So you'll see in communities that are healthy where the devotees are, you know, aware of those relationships and are supporting each other in those relationships.
So essentially, I mean, your point there about harmony, I think that's very important.
Yes.
But essentially, from what I understand, this should be giving, because siksha literally means, you know, knowledge.
So yes, giving instructions.
Yeah, but not just any knowledge. Don't tell people how to fix cars and stuff, which is knowledge.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least within this column, that knowledge is coming from Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
So obviously, we're seeing the instructions they're giving should be in harmony with the instructions of Prabhupada.
Definitely. Well, there's another personality. I didn't mention Prabhupada also, but that's certainly for us, and I did mention that in my class, a good point, that the founder acharya for us is also like an anchor point. Very much so. Yes, good point.
So
Prabhupada, definitely. And so therefore you'll find that the devotees coming after Prabhupada are following Prabhupada's instructions.
So where I'm reading to, I've been listening, I think I mentioned the other day, I've been listening to this lecture series by Ravindra Sri.
Yeah.
There, it's like there have been in the past, I don't know so much in the past, there have been people in positions in this column, those which is in Shiva temple, who are seen by the you know, general devotees as being a siksha, but actually not giving instructions in accordance with what Prabhupada's given. So I feel that when devotees are making that decision about accepting instruction, they should, you know, also be aware of what Prabhupada's instructions are on this topic so they can see, is this in accordance with, you know, what Prabhupada wanted? Because
I've seen
things
that
happen,
but
it is not so.
Yeah, well, I think that's a given, isn't it? That's a given. We obviously, you know, we wouldn't be in ISKCON if somebody was giving us instructions counter to what, or contrary to what Prabhupada was giving us. Sure, obviously, but then, you know, if it is happening, then we should get a new. We should say to the person who's giving the wrong instructions, sorry, Bhagavad Gita. Where do you find that in Prabhupada's books, say, for example? It's quite easy to do. You know, where do you find that in Prabhupada's books? If they can't substantiate it. But, you know, I would have to say, it is a fact, but, you know, I think, you know, on the whole, at least in this community, I certainly hope so, that we, on the whole, generally are following Prabhupada's instructions. So we don't have to, you know, those things we can. I mean, I know I'm speaking for myself now, but I think I can fairly safely defend our practice of Krishna consciousness within this community anyway as being adherent to what Prabhupada taught. So I think we're fairly safe in that regard. Certainly we have to be mindful of those things, but, you know, I think it's a given. It's an axiom. It's axiomatic. Yes, it's got to be what Prabhupada wanted. If it's not what Prabhupada wanted, then we're not in ISKCON. Is it reasonable?
But the point I'm making is that how do you know what Prabhupada wanted? You need to study the books as well.
Oh, definitely. Therefore, we have Bhakti Shastri, we've got Bhakti Vaibhav, we have Bhagavatam class, we have Bhagavad Gita classes. Definitely. No, that's right. Definitely we should know. So therefore we have checks and balances also within our communities. And, you know, we don't want a particular person suddenly thinking, you know, hang on a second, I'm the boss around here and you all do what I say because I'm the boss. Yes, we do follow a person's instructions if they have a position of responsibility. But they have a position of responsibility because they do faithfully adhere to Prabhupada's instructions. When you're not following Prabhupada's instructions, it'll only be a matter of time before they're doing something else. although it may appear sometimes to be a long time, but it is only a matter of time. That's my observation. Unfortunate. Sad as it may be, but that's what happens. All right, I think we should finish here. I'm leaving. Well, Chinchwipa and I are leaving tonight to go to India for 4 weeks, or the good part thereof. So I just wanted to thank all of the devotees for their encouragement and support, especially over the last week when I haven't really been doing anything except sleeping. I've done a lot of sleeping. I've probably been the most bodily conscious I've ever been as a devotee. Whenever my body hurts and I lie it down and give it a sleep. But fortunately, by the good wishes and by the prayers of the devotees, and I've been recovered fairly swiftly, actually. When I went to see the doctor yesterday, he was surprised. First of all, he was warning me because I told him how I was keeping my... The advice is to have a bath, a saline bath every day, or two a day. And I said, I don't have a bath. So I told him how I was using a flannel and cleaning myself. And he said, well, you've got to be careful. You know, you can aggravate things like that. And then he said, oh, let's have a look anyway. And he said, wow. He said, this is amazing. This is really good. He said, you can travel, no problem. He said, usually people, after a week of an operation, they're looking pretty bruised and battered. But you're okay. Should be okay. So I think by the mercy of the devotees and the good wishes of you all, we've recovered sufficiently to be able to travel. And I trust that all of the services will go on nicely, as they have been. Gopal Guru Prabhu is looking after the rosters, the kitchen and the other cleaning and so forth rosters. Krishnagraja is assisting with the deity worship, and I think Krishnamurari and Ursula are looking after the women's services in the paraphernalia room. And we've had a pretty successful few months with the catering, and we've got not a lot of things coming up, but some, especially Gaur Purnima. This year we've been accepted to participate in the Moomba Parade, which we haven't done for many, many years, probably for 20 years. And so we're negotiating with Atmarama and the devotees in Sydney to borrow their rath cart, the small rath cart that they've got. And we're tossing up at the moment taking our big Jagannath on that cart, if we can fit them. You've seen that cart, haven't you? I think they can fit, we just have to... Bhakta's recruiting some of our more experienced construction workers to have a look at the cart, and we'll probably modify it a bit. So that's on the Monday before Gaur Purnima, which is the Wednesday the 15th. So on March the 13th, we'll be participating in the Moomba Parade. So we'll be calling you, giving you your services in that regard. I'll be back on the 7th, so I'll be here for them. But Bhakta and Gopal and Prabhu are going to be getting together to finalise the details of that. Have we got admission to the Grand Prix? Do we know?
No, not yet.
Of this month. Yeah, we may also have a big cat. We may also be catering at the Grand Prix. What's that going to entail?
A lot of service.
A lot of service. Okay, good. But that's certainly a big opportunity to distribute a lot of prasadam. We have to dress up like Grand Prix Grand Prix employees. And they'd be right where the action is. Dry. Well, that could be quite interesting, actually. It'd be good to get in. But you'll let everybody know? Let me know, so I'll stick it up on the website. If you want to find out what's going on, send us an email and we'll find out and put the information up on the website. But certainly we want to try and make this Moomba parade a success, because Bhakta's already had the lady who's coordinating things over to his place. They're very friendly. They came and had a meeting here with us, and more or less they've sort of said, you know, whatever you want to do, do it, because they want community groups that add colour and movement and sound to their procession. Right. Any comments, questions on any of these logistical problems? Have you? You don't know when you're going, do you, Sringer? Right. Okay. Gundaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi Radha Vallabha ki jai. Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandira ki jai.